Hello, and welcome to another audio session of Authorized Transmissions by EMS Solutions. My name is Jim Hoffman, and today I have a special guest with me that many listeners have heard about, Dr. Brian Bledsoe. Dr. Bledsoe has written and authored many articles and books in the EMS field, and it is a pleasure to have him with us today. Brian, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Brian, for those who may not have been exposed to your articles or books, can you just give us a little background on yourself?
Well, my background's kind of interesting. I originally got out of high school and was in radio, and ended up in EMS kind of serendipitously, but I worked as an EMT paramedic and paramedic instructor in my hometown of Fort Worth, Texas, in the 70s into the early 80s, and then went to medical school from 83 to 87, residency after that, and practiced emergency medicine since that time, but back in around 80, 82, when I was teaching, I started to do some writing, and just mainly for my paramedic class I was teaching. And Brady, you know, got a copy of one of the early pharmacology references that I did and developed it into books. And, you know, basically one thing led to another, and before you know it, you know, here I am.
Right. Yeah, a lot of times I get that's the way it steamrolls, you know. What I want to do, I'd like to take this opportunity and just ask a couple of questions that I've seen personally getting more and more talked about in forums and trade schools. You see more and more articles about some of these issues and topics, and even people talking about it, you know, next to each other. And I think it would be a great idea to get your take on these subjects.
Okay.
Okay. The first one I just want to ask you is there's many people out there that think right now that one of the sticking points that kind of holds EMS back from many of the goals that people would like to see, whether it's going to be an increase in pay, licensing, education, the thing that holds us back is the lack of unity within our own ranks. And I'm asking, what would you think is the biggest thing that's holding us back?
Well, I think it's several things. I mean, first of all, I agree. I mean, I have in the November issue of GEMS.com, my whole thesis of that article is the lack of a single voice, you know, people joining in EMT, and
right.
You know, we're always so divided. I think another thing, you know, when you look at EMS, is it's fun, and you can't look at many things in healthcare and say, quote, they're fun. You don't see people volunteering to be respiratory therapists and such. So
right.
You have a situation here, and I've had paramedics tell me this, especially earlier in their career, is they do it for free. And, you know, these employers know that. And so it continues to keep salaries down. And you know, because the salaries have been so low, it's been hard to mandate, you know, enhanced education, which is going to lead to increased salaries. It's the chicken or the egg sort of argument. And it's kind of resulted in some cases, not always, a degradation in the quality of the educational programs. So,
yeah.
You know, my daughter, for example, went to cosmetology school here in Texas, and you know, she had a total of 2,000 hours before she was able to cut hair.
I mean,
paramedics can do the same thing in 600 hours. It's just, I know it's a difference, but it's not all that different. You know, I think that we're our own worst enemy. You know, we don't speak for ourselves. We remain subservient to the houses of medicine and nursing. We fight among ourselves. A lot of it in the U.S. compared to other countries is that we don't have an identity. You know, you ask average Dallas firefighter, paramedic, what do? Is I'm a firefighter. You ask the same question in Austin, I'm a paramedic. You know, 90% of what fire departments do nowadays are EMS, 80 to 90%, and we've got to get on the same page regardless of the delivery model.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I started out volunteering, and now today I'm kind of against the whole volunteer model because I do feel, like you said, it kind of keeps salaries down and kind of keeps us from advancing somewhat, you know, to make into our own little, you know, entity.
Well, EMS in this country is a local issue. It's a local government issue, whether it's
right.
County or city compared to Australia or some of these other countries where it's statewide. And we're never going to have enough volume to have all paid or career services. That's just not going to happen unless big changes occur. And, you know,
right.
I think volunteers can do a good job, and I've seen many do a good job. It's just there's a decline in volunteerism right now. I think some of it's Generation X, Y, Z, or whatever it is, but
right.
Some of it is because paramedics don't get the respect they need. As a paid or career paramedic, yeah, you get paid. You do get the respect from society. As a volunteer, you know, basically all you get is respect from society, and that's gone down. You know, lawsuits against EMS people are up. You know, some of the movies that have come out have not painted us in a good light.
So
why volunteer, you know? And that's a conundrum we're going to have to face.
Yeah. I think a lot of people probably listening are going to probably agree with most of what, you know, you said as far as that goes. You did mention about education as you know, comparing to like a cosmopolitan, you know, type of education where the hours are, you know, much more than, let's say, a paramedic. And when you're thinking about that, do you think that's needed to provide quality EMS care, or do you think that the trade schools provide enough care and enough training and skills to really succeed in EMS?
Well, and that's a hard question. I think up to this point, up into the start of this millennium, the trade schools probably did a fine job. However, as we're starting to see the literature evolve, the science evolve, a lot of what we believed has not panned out. A lot of things that seemed intuitive and logical have not panned out. You know, we've spent our whole careers trying to raise the dead or trying to save trauma victims that are unsavable. You know,
right.
What the literature is showing is that we, to make a difference, have to intervene earlier in the disease process. And that's such things as pain therapy, you know, aspirin for STEMIs, and, you know, CPAP for CHF. And that requires that paramedics be, and EMTs, be even better about identifying the disease processes earlier, which means they have to have a better understanding of the pathophysiology and such. So I think that we're going to have to push the educational curricula and upwards, you know, because we're going to be asking more of them. Of course, from a labor management issue, that's a problem, especially with the fire department where you have dual or even more responsibilities. You know, they you know, have to maintain their accreditation for the fire aspect of things, and if we're pushing them to do more with EMS, you know, they're running out of time and issues. And that's,
right.
That's always been a big complaint, you know. And that's actually been a reason that that some of the curricula have been, you know, stayed away from the trade schools. With the current scope of practice materials that were released a couple years ago, or a year or so ago, which the new curricula is going to be based on, there was a big mandate to say it should be a part of a university. However, again, pressure from the industry water that document down so that it doesn't occur. I think there's something to be said for being in a university, you have access to the library, the facilities. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's getting harder and harder to find patients to practice on, and so we're going to simulators. These simulators are $250,000. And
yeah, sure,
I think things are ultimately driving everything toward the university setting, although it's slower than I would like to see.
That's very interesting. I think I definitely agree with you with that. I'm on the same line of thinking too, where the scope of practice has been growing. Even myself, I'm doing RSI now, CPAP, things like that. I had to go to additional training, you know, to kind of understand what it's all about and you know, when to use it, when not to use it. And it does kind of open your eyes that you need to have, you know, that additional training. And like you said before too, the live patients are getting less and less, and the simulators are so expensive that sometimes even these trade schools can't afford, you know, simulators that they have, and sometimes I guess the college type programs maybe have more money to put in.
Well, and the real confounding variable in this is that the further you are from a hospital, the more sophisticated the care must be. I mean, in a city like Dallas or some of these large cities, you know, they may be able to get away with kind of advanced EMTs that you know, kind of basically prepared to take care of things for the first 10 minutes or so. But the
mm-hmm.
further you get, and from especially from good health care, the more paramedics need to be sophisticated, but then the issue comes back. There are less calls to support the pay and infrastructure.
Right, because
it's
more rural.
There's less chance to perform the skills, which means you need increased chances for skills practice or simulator use or such. So, you know,
right.
From a physical standpoint, I'm actually pretty conservative. I think, though, we need to really, you know, declare, or our leaders need to declare that emergency medical service is first of all an essential service and should be funded accordingly. I mean, you know, I think there should be full parity across all three aspects of what people consider public safety, although, I continue to maintain that EMS is more healthcare than public safety, although they're components of each.
Yeah. Well, I know there was a study recently in New Jersey, And I guess kind of on the lines of being rural as opposed to urban, where they're suggesting now that, that crews should be staffed by one paramedic and one EMT, whereas now they have it as two paramedics. Now, I personally worked in both type systems, and I feel that two medic units is much more efficient than a one paramedic or one paramedic, one EMT crew. I'm wondering what you think as far as that type of staffing. Do you think that kind of works having one and one, or you think it should be two medics?
Well, in the days when I was a paramedic, we could there were only so few paramedics available. We only worked, you know, one paramedic, one EMT.
Mm-hmm.
The literature is actually pretty mixed on that. You know, there's some literature looking at one EMT, one paramedic, and when you add a second paramedic, it seems to prolong scene times. I think that, you know, that may be an outlier for that particular study. I think in any situation, the two paramedics are going to be better. But I think it's one of those things, in order to get the industry to pay for it, we're going to have to look at whether it does improve outcomes. And, again, compared to when I was a paramedic, when we had, you know, three patients in an accident or a collision, we would take care of all three of them. Now, three patients is a multiple casualty incident.
Right.
And you know, I think certainly if paramedics are willing to, for example, you know, a double paramedic ambulance can actually transport two people from the same call, you know, is going to be a better use of resources probably without any lapses in the quality of care. But it's got to be studied, and the studies so far have been mixed, actually.
Hmm. Well, I know that one argument I see a lot, especially in a lot of the EMS forums, they talk about how there should be only one level of an EMS provider, which is the highest level of being a paramedic, and that a lot of the ENT basics, intermediate, should be totally done away with, and then that a standard training format, and including that with licensing, should be established for just one title of being a paramedic, with the goal of all the ambulances being staffed with two paramedics and handling all the call types. And a lot of people feel that this kind of might help the public and the government agencies kind of understand what we do by letting us have just one job description, one educational format, but it'll kind of also help us maybe make that jump and be able to make those changes in advance that we want to make to be a service of our own. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that type of thing about merging everything into one provider, making everything one either paramedic or calling a pre-hospital care provider or something like that, and if that would maybe help, if that would help EMS or if it would wind up hurting us in the long run.
I think that's kind of a two-edged sword, too. I was just in Syracuse, New York a couple of days ago at their state conference, and, heck, there's more levels of EMS providers than I can understand, you know, and several states are like that. I think that there's a couple of things. I think we need to have from a national standpoint, we need to have finite levels. But I think we need to follow the Canadians and call everybody paramedic because that's what
right.
The public expects. I mean, you say, hi, I'm Brian Bledsoe, an EMT intermediate from the Midlothian Fire Department. People don't have a clue what that means. Are you an intern?
Right, exactly.
I mean, so you couldn't make it all the way to paramedic. And I think that the nomenclature should be the same. But I think, you know, I'm fortunate in a way to live in Texas where the medical directors here are basically omnipotent. You know, that is, there are no state regulations outside of the Medical Practice Act that restrict what we can have our paramedics do, as opposed to states like New Jersey or California, where they are very heavily regulated. So, you know, for example, I ran the emergency department's EMS service in the county south of Dallas for 10 years, and we have two interstate highways, one between Dallas and Houston, the other between Dallas and Austin, and a major state highway. We were seeing a lot of closed head injuries, and we added RSI without any problems, and it worked for that system, whereas it may not be appropriate for downtown Dallas. So I think there should be, you know, general categories. But I think that it should be up to the local medical director or entity to decide whether to push or retract that. Now, I'm also very disappointed that the national scope of practice did not include the critical care paramedic, because I think that we're seeing when we look at the Australians and the Brits that there is an evolving role for a paramedic practitioner, kind of on the model of our American physician assistants, that is,
okay,
to send out and do, you know, take care of non-emergent cases or cases that don't necessarily require hospital transport. And the literature I've seen out of the UK, that is going pretty well. There's now four programs in the UK that are taking, you know, paramedic-level people with quite a bit of field experience and running them through the practitioner program, which has components of public health and critical care medicine and, you know, suturing and things of that nature. And
right.
I think that's where it's going. I mean, we're producing physicians as fast as we can. Nobody's going to nursing school. you know, the only other market to look for perhaps are paramedics.
Wow. That's a good, that's actually a good idea. That might actually wind up working, maybe cut down on some of the, you know, 911 calls for the, you know, belly aches if you had that type of thing going on maybe as well.
Yeah.
You know, having that type of a level going on. Along those lines, I know the next question is kind of general, but I still like to hear what you think about it, and where are you seeing EMS, let's say, as a career in 5 years or 10 years? Do you see it growing at all or kind of staying the same?
Well, actually, you asked me that 2 years ago. I would have said it looked dismal. I think it looks better. I think that I'm seeing more demand for hiring paramedics. I think the science is pushing it to a higher level. And I think that while temporarily a problem, the current paramedic shortage is going to work in our advantage. It's going to drive the salaries up. And then we can continue to push as textbook authors and such to increase the educational base. You know, I've written about this a lot. I mean, people get upset. So, you know, they go in the emergency department, EMS people, and they see nurses doing basically the same thing paramedics do. But it's an apples and oranges argument in that, you know, these nurses have a minimum of a 2-year degree and most of them 4-year degrees as opposed to paramedics who, you know, have 1,500 hours of training, oftentimes in a non-university setting. And those two things have to come together. I actually think that, you know, the future is looking better. I think salaries coming up, job opportunities that come up, I think they're going to be more challenged, but we're going to ask more of them. You know, we're going to have to do away with the, you know, the Dick and Jane's, you know, paramedic school and be more controlled and accredited and so on.
Well, I know you used a couple of flights, so I don't want to take too much of your time, but I do want to ask you before I end the session, if you can give us any kind of, like, behind-the-scenes looks of anything that you have, that you're working on, any kind of projects that you're working on right now.
Well, a couple things that we're working on. I can't really give you the details. We're working on a system to actually enhance the use of pre-hospital analgesia, even in the role of first responders. Doing a lot of development of curricula to basically, you know, first of all, we need to break down this barrier between ALS and BLS. Because you've seen this as a paramedic that 4-year-old kids with asthma mix their own albuterols and give themselves medicine, you know, and you know, 8-year-old kids with severe allergies give themselves EpiPens. You know, I think we need to empower and charge our first responders and EMTs with things that were typically in the domain of ALS. That is, giving aspirin, you know, some sort of analgesia, EpiPens, albuterol. And things of that nature. We need to blur that line. And unfortunately, when you're talking about very heavily regulated states, like I'd mentioned, the only way to do that is to produce curricula. And I've been working on that quite a bit. In terms of research, I'm involved with some sort of research where we're dealing with the role of carbon monoxide in firefighter deaths. We're learning a lot more about carbon monoxide. It's much more complex than what's written in our books. You know, it actually acts a little bit like cyanide, and there's an evolving role of what we call free radicals in illness, and I'm of the belief that a lot of deaths that occur in firefighters and a limited degree EMS people that are attributed to this cardiovascular may be work related, and we're looking down that avenue. You know, just I'm trying to look at the various practices that that makes sense and those that don't. If we're doing things that aren't making the patient any better, there's no point in doing them. And it was actually Jim Page, you know, I sought out his counsel, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, you know, saying, you know, I'm kind of frustrated. All I do is go to these conferences and give talks on shock and pharmacology. He said, well, take on some controversy. He said, that always, you know, stimulates discussion. And he did. And he actually listed CISM and some of these other things that I've taken some shots about. But when you look at it, we published that thing in EMS Magazine, you know, 4 years ago about the myths of EMS, and now most of those things have gone away. And I'm not taking responsibility for it, but bringing a discussion out, you know, has I think made paramedics more critical thinkers, and people don't simply buy things now because it you know, has a glossy paper, and it was endorsed by Dr. Rosenblatt at New York University. They look at it, and they're skeptics, which is, I think, what we all should be, because we're in one way or another, we're on some degree, at some degree, we're scientists.
Well, I think a lot of those things you're talking about is very interesting. I think a lot of educational, EMS professionals are going to be looking forward to a lot of those changes you're looking to do in your studies on curriculum and things like that. And it's something to look forward to, and hopefully, you know, will take us, you know, another step forward in the EMS industry.
It's going to be an interesting time. You know, I catch some grief, and people bitch at me about talking about the Australians of other countries, and
uh-huh.
I think there's strengths in every country, but you know, we're in the United States, we're so, you know, North American or Amerocentric that, you know, we can look at some other areas and see. And I look at the paramedics in Australia, and I'm 52 years old, and I go to stations in New South Wales and Queensland and visit these paramedics, and you know, oh yeah, I've read your books, and you talk to them, and they're my age, and they've been on that same ambulance for 30 years, and they've got mandatory retirement in 8 years, and they're lamenting it. At the same
right.
time, they're making $100,000 Australian dollars a year. They've got a great retirement system, and they get 6 weeks of a paid vacation annually. You know, I would still be in EMS had I had that sort of, because I love EMS. I love it more than medicine. But in 1982, I was teaching paramedic school, making $16,000 a year, and
wow.
And I had I was still married, and young children, and I just didn't see a future. I was lucky that I had good grades and I could go to medical school, but you know what happens with that is that because you take the people that that you want to keep in the profession, you drive them out. And
yeah.
I think it's all going to change. I think it's going to be a fun time. I'm looking forward to the next 4 years or so.
That's great, Brian. Well, I'm running out of time here for my minute, so I do want to thank you for taking the time to participate in this audio session. And maybe in the future we can sit down again and maybe do a focus on just one topic that's important to you and maybe get some more insight into EMS education and its future.
Yeah, that would be great. Just give me a call. Now you may get all evaluations and say they hated it, and you'll never call me again, but I hope not.
I don't know about that. I got everyone. Mostly everybody that I deal with pretty much like what I've been putting out, and they've been enjoying.
Well, not you. We're talking about me.
hopefully they'll take my recommendation.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again, Brian, and try to get some rest on your flight.
Okay, you too.
All right, Brian. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, that's it for Brian Bledsoe today. Hopefully we'll get another interview with him in the future. But you can read the latest from Brian Bledsoe at gems.com, and you can also find many of his publications at amazon.com. And also check out ems-safety.com. We're going to have some selected materials there as well that Brian's been involved with. I want to thank you once again for listening to this audio session of Authorized Transmissions, and this session can be heard anytime at ems-safety.com/audio.htm. Be sure to sign up at the website for updates so you won't miss any future audio sessions, giveaways, or special offers. Become a member today, and it's all free at www.ems-safety.com.